Please lie on your back if you aren't already. And take up your contact with the floor. See what it's like today. See what it says about the rest of you as you rest on the floor. In particular, you could consider the shape of the whole of the spine, starting at the base of the skull, which is somewhere between your ears at about the level of the nostrils and the ears, going all the way down through the fused vertebrae in the pelvis to the tailbone, with all the curves in between. And those curves, for our purposes in awareness through movement, are forward and back relative to yourself. So where is the spine curved forward away from the floor? Where is it curved back and so press into the floor? For most of us, the neck is forward, and at some point, the upper back, the thoracic spine is in contact with the floor. Where does that contact start as you move down the spine in the direction of the feet, again, relative to yourself down? And where again does the low back come away from the floor, and how much? What are those curves like? So the contact with the floor helps you understand something about, know something about, the whole shape of the torso, the spine, the organization of the pelvis. Excuse me. And now note the position of the head, whether it's tilted a little up overhead or down toward the feet, and get a sense of the whole plane of the face. Where does the face face? Is it directly forward, parallel with the ceiling in front of you, and parallel with the floor behind? Or is it tipped a little, so the plane of the face is angled a little overhead or down? And make a similar assessment about the position of the pelvis. Is it tipped a little down or up? It may be asymmetric as well, but does the way the pelvis rests on the floor let you know if it's tipped? So the pubic bone in the front is down a little, maybe there's a little more arch behind the back or space, or that the pelvis is tipped the other way. So the tailbone came away from the floor a little between the legs, and the back is low back is closer to the floor. All right, now, whatever the organization of the head and the your sense of the plane of the face, with a small movement, not more than an inch or two, bring the head forward away from the floor and return it. And note immediately what happens to the contact of the back with the floor when you do that. What presses into the floor? How does it change? Does more of the back at some point come into the floor as some of it comes away? You can even make it a very small movement. Be sure to set the head down and really pause. Just try it a few times and then rest. Really noting how the back shapes to lift the head. All right, then leave it for a moment. Rest. Now, several times, take up lifting the head again, but first do it in a way where you lead with the chin. So the chin comes forward first and the head tips. So the nose moves up a little bit, the chin comes away from the chest. And how does that affect what happens on the floor behind you? How does it change? Does more of the upper back come away from the floor or less? How about as you go down, does the lower part of the thoracic spine come more into contact with the floor, or less than when you were previously lifting? Then pause. And now try it a few times, letting the chin, or taking the chin back so the chin goes toward the throat, and then lift the head forward. And what happens in the middle of yourself? Does that change the way your back moves on the floor? And just try it in any of these ways, neutrally, with the chin moving away, with the chin falling back, and see what happens in the back when you do so. How far down do you detect a change along the floor? And is it helpful to accentuate that change in the back, maybe? To take the head forward. All right, let's pause and leave that. So perhaps you noted as you were taking the head forward that some part of the back goes closer to the floor, in other words, goes back. As the shape of the whole spine changes in order to lift the head. Of course, the head is attached to the spine at the top. So to lift the head, you cannot but do something with the shape of the spine. So in this lesson, perhaps we'll learn a little bit about distributing the work by intentionally using the back. All right, now take just the right arm overhead on the floor to the degree that that's comfortable. And now lifting from the shoulder, take the arm a little bit forward, no more than an inch or two, and note what happens in the back. If you really lift from the shoulder, is it possible that you can find something similar here, that there's a change in the low part of the shoulder blade that, or some part of the back, or maybe a little turning of the back, so that as you lift the arm forward, you note some small change in the rib cage, the spine, the shoulder blade on the floor. Find that something goes back to take the arm forward. Just try that several times. You could try coordinating the exhale with it a little bit, perhaps. And you lower the arm as carefully as you lift it, looking for the way that you reorganize the spine, the back, the rib cage, the shoulder, in order to take the arm forward, taking something else back, even if it's small. All right, then take the arm alongside and rest. So if in your, as you rest here for a moment, if you think about how the back contact with the floor changed, how you use the back such that that contact with the floor changed, a little different for the head, which is relatively heavy, and for the arm, which is relatively light compared to the trunk. In that case, the movement in the back is smaller for the arm and a little bit larger for the head. So now take the feet a little bit apart, comfortably. So there. And now, considering how the spine could change, the shape of the spine could change to do work in the extremities, lift the right leg a little bit away from the floor and return it. Now note what you do and see for yourself, does the low back come away from the floor when you lift the leg? Or is it possible to take the low back into the floor to lift the leg? And maybe even let the pelvis roll very slightly to the left. And when you do it this way, what goes back toward the floor as the leg comes forward away from it? What's easier? What takes less effort? All right, and then leave it for a moment and rest. And take the arm over, right arm overhead on the floor again. And with the feet a little bit apart. Now, think it through first, and then using a movement of taking some part of the back and letting the spine change shape, the whole trunk change shape, take the arm, the head, and the leg all forward in a small movement, and then return them to the floor. What can you take back toward the floor in the middle of yourself to make this easier? And how does this compare to the moving any of the individual parts, the head, the arm, the leg? Does this seem more difficult, easier? See if it's possible to really take some part of the back, the mid-back, the low back, more into the floor, and maybe even a little to the left to lift the right limbs and the head. You see if that's possible. And you make it a small movement, see what it's like here. With the notion of sensing how everything changes behind you, the contact with the floor, how that reflects your reorganizing the whole torso, the spine, the head, the pelvis, in order to lift these forward. All right, then leave it and take the arm alongside and rest. So this sort of action is reflected in other lessons, some of which we've done in this group recently, and Feldenkrais comments here that we do these things to understand a bit of the foundation of what we're doing. In fact, so that it's possible to derive more benefit from other lessons. All right, when you're ready, roll and come up to sit in a simple cross-legged position. And now consider the plane of the face here, sitting upright. So perhaps now the plane of the face is forward, more or less, so that you face forward, parallel to one of the walls now in front of you. And keeping that organization of the head so that the face is forward, begin to take the whole head forward and down. and see what that's like. And do so by allowing the back to round. So some part of the back goes back. So you leave the face facing forward. So the chin comes away from the chest. And maybe in a small arc, lowers to the floor and then comes back. And what happens in the back to allow you to do this? It's not that you just tip forward, but the face stays forward and the back rounds. It's as if you're going to lower your head to the floor, keeping the face forward. So you do whatever you need to with your legs to make this possible. And note how the back can round back to bring the head forward. It's as if you're going to take your head directly toward the floor and you move the back out of the way. It could be quite small. Just get a sense that you lower the head toward the floor, not so much bowing, but rounding the back to lower the head. And the face stays forward, so the chin comes away from the chest as you take the back, mid-back back, and the head forward. What happens in the hip joints then? If the back is falling back, the pelvis is tipping back, the head is coming forward, the tailbone is coming forward. So the main thing that you keep is that the face stays oriented toward the wall in front of you. All right, and then pause in sitting for just a moment and try taking the head in the other direction, this time allowing the chin to come away from the chest and the crown of the head back to look overhead, and note what you do in the middle of yourself to make this movement as you make it a little more inclusive of the whole spine. Note now, does some part of the mid-back come forward as you take the head back, and as you bring it back to neutral, what happens in the back? So feel if you shape the spine to take the head back, there's a way that the mid-back can come forward as the head goes back. Maybe the pelvis tips to allow that. And then as you come back to neutral, the back falls back a little. Something happens in the pelvis, the head settles. So imagine that you're going to move the mid back to take the head forward now, and then take it forward to tip the pelvis and take the head back. So you alternate between these movements. So you don't look down at the floor, but you extend the face forward and round the back. And then arch through the whole of the back so the pelvis tips and the head looks overhead. So the thing here is to look at the inclusion of the movement of the spine and the trunk as you lift the head and feel the impact in the pelvis. The mid-back comes forward. We might call it an arching movement to take the head back. And then as you take the chin and face forward, the back goes back and what we might call a rounding movement of the back. You see, you do something in the low abdomen in front, especially to take the head forward. You can feel how that tips. All right, and then leave it and rest on your back. Unless you're curious and you want to do a few more movements, in which case you are welcome to. Note what it's like to rest on the floor now. What part of the back is in contact with the floor, or what parts, what locations along the whole of the back? What's your sense of the shape of the whole of the spine with its curving forward and curving back? all the way down to the tailbone, just forward a little from the floor between the legs, the base of the skull, where it's certainly forward away from the floor. Right, and now come up to stand. Perhaps face a wall somewhere. You don't need to be close to it, just turn to face the wall so that you can use the wall as a gauge for the plane of the face. Is the face facing that wall? Is it tipped up a little or down in the direction of the floor? Take the feet a little bit wider than hips width apart. And leaving the face forward, gently, just a little bit, an inch or two, bend the knees forward a couple of times and then extend them again. See if you can detect a little change in the pelvis as you bend the knees just a little. Now, bend them enough and so that the arms start to come a little to the front and stay forward with the knees bent. And here, bring the head forward as if you're going to take the face toward the wall in front of you, as we did in sitting. So what happens in the back when you take the face forward? It's possible to try to limit movement in the whole of the spine, but what if you allow movement in the whole of the spine? You feel for a little movement in the hip joints and a way that the back can round back. So in a sense, it's like you're taking the head toward the floor and you move the back to allow that to happen. Note what happens in the pelvis. Is there a little tipping as the low back especially goes back? Does the whole of the, as the back rounds in this way, does the pelvis tip so that the tailbone would come forward? If you had a tail, it might come between your legs. So the tail would come forward and the head, the face comes forward. All right, and then pause in standing for just a moment. And now come into that position again where you allow the knees to bend and the pelvis tips of the low back and the mid back go back and the face comes toward the wall in front. The head gets a little closer to the floor. And then to reverse that, take the crown of the head, do what you need to do with the whole of yourself to take the crown of the head closer to the ceiling. So perhaps the knees, the back go in the other direction and then come back down. So you take the crown of the head away from the ceiling, let the face come forward toward the wall. Let the back round back and the pelvis tip so the tailbone comes forward, and then reverse it so you take the head toward the ceiling. Feldenkrais says here, as if someone was grabbing you by the hairs on the top of your head and drawing that up. Let's see if you can get the coordination of it so that as some part of the back rounds back, the tailbone comes a little forward, the face comes a little forward, the head lowers toward the floor, even if it's just incrementally, and then you take it back in the direction of the ceiling. Some of the lessons we've done recently have clarifications about the hip joints. Maybe you feel for those, sense for them, locate them, and note if you note a little movement in the hip joint as you use the spine to lower and raise the head from the floor, letting the back go back to let the head come forward. All right, then leave it and come to rest on your back. So imagine here, as you rest on your back, the five lines, they've come up previous lessons a little bit, but you draw a sort of simple schematic representation of a human being. Looks like a stick figure with a ball on the top for the head. And relate that image to your own experience at the moment. So if you were drawing the lines through yourself, you'd have a central line, which you can draw from the tailbone up to the base of the skull. And note for yourself, even when you take up a mental action like this, is there already shape to that line? Did you draw it in the middle of yourself or on the floor behind you? Did you follow the curves of the spine as you're aware of them, or did you make it kind of straight? And for our purposes, draw the line through the middle of yourself, from the base of the skull, between the ears, to the tailbone. Follow the curve of the spine, perhaps as you imagine them, on the front of the spine, in the middle of yourself. Of course, this is approximate. You can't know with certainty what those shapes are like on the interior of yourself, but you can sort of estimate them and improve that as you move, which we can do as we go along here. And then you add the lines for the arms coming out from the top of the trunk, the base of the neck. Where is that in the middle of yourself? Not on the floor and not on the front surface of yourself, but where do you find the base of the neck? Seventh cervical vertebrae, and just below that, the first thoracic vertebra. And then the lines come out from there through the shoulder joints, the big joints of the shoulder, where the upper arm meets the scapula, down through the middle of the elbows and out through the wrists, through the hands. The image can be a little more diffuse there, or you can choose a finger or divide it into fingers. And then draw the two leg lines, and when you take the leg lines through the hip joints, where do you choose to connect those lines to the spine? Then you take them down from some low part of the spine, perhaps in the area of the low belly, through the hip joints, through the knees, through the ankles, down through the feet. Then get a kind of composite of these five lines with the head resting at the top. So Feldenkrais has a fairly long lecture here in this lesson about this is a kind of image that's used often in descriptions of exercise or movements, to use a stick figure like this. And our notion is that when you understand the functioning of the spine and the pelvis and the shoulders, the head, the musculature, the nervous system, it makes your movements can become simpler, easier, more organized when you understand that you know how to do. He says, what you know how to do, you understand. So you can imagine here, we'll just touch on some of these points, which are in service of understanding a little better, you can imagine the, if you think of just these lines, there's no muscles, there's no nervous system. As you start to attach muscles in your image, and you think, well, if I wanted to use some muscles on the front to take the head forward away from the floor, the muscles have to be attached somewhere along that spine line. And if you think in a simple way that the muscles are not too complex, but they're like a string, well, you could imagine that you could bend that spine line back to take the head forward. And of course, if you take that middle of that spine line back to lift the head forward, there's an impact in the pelvis, and that might affect the low legs. The legs are a heavy weight that hold the pelvis to the floor. But it's possible to organize the front of the neck, the front of the pelvis, so that the front of the shoulder, so that when you want to lift one of these limbs forward, or all of them, or the head, you can do so by shaping the spine such that the middle goes back and either end comes a little bit forward, or one end. Maybe too, you'd even want to turn a little bit to support the action of lifting. So, given these notions, try as we did at the beginning of the lesson, taking your head forward from the floor. And what do you do with your back, the shaping of the whole spine to take the head forward? Is it possible to think about taking the shaping the spine in order to take the head forward? So you don't leave out the whole of the spine. You try a few different ways. Taking the chin a little more forward first. Setting the head down gently. Taking the crown of the head a little more forward first so the chin falls back as you take the face forward. How does that change what you do in the middle of yourself? Does it change it? Is it simpler to think of this action of the opposing movement, taking the spine back in order to, some part of it back, curving it back to take the face forward? How's that different if you take the chin first, the forehead first, or the whole plane of the face in the direction of the ceiling? Just try several different ways. All right, and then leave it and rest. Now take the right arm overhead on the floor. So the back of the hand is to the floor, the arm is overhead somewhere, and as we did at the beginning, take the shoulder and the arm forward, and note if there's a way to include the middle of yourself here. So the arm is overhead on the floor, and see about shaping the trunk to take the arm forward. So some part of the trunk goes back, presses into the floor in order to take the arm forward. Just a small movement and then return it. What if you think about leaving the front of the armpit relatively still and you lift only by taking some part of the back into the floor? So the arm rests on the floor, you can feel something press forward on the front of yourself, take that back and press into the floor to lift the arm gently, using the trunk. Note how the arm is relatively light and that it does not require a big movement, Feldenkrais suggests that the ratio is similar to the ratio of the weights. So if the trunk is quite heavy and the arm is relatively light, a small movement in the trunk will lift the arm. All right, and then leave it and take the arm alongside, rest for a moment. I'll take the feet a little bit apart, and using the same notion that you could maybe leave something long in the front of the hip joint at the right, use the shaping of the spine to affect the pelvis to lift the right leg forward away from the floor. How can you use this notion that you curve the spine, taking some part back into the floor in order to lift the leg? And maybe even it's helpful to very slightly roll the pelvis a little to the right, the trunk the left. You just look for it. You don't have to impose that notion. You see, when you really take the back, the mid and low back to lift the leg, is there a little turn there? Okay, then set the leg down and pause. So Feldenkrais comments at various parts and points in this lesson that if you move in accord with the nature of the skeleton, the musculature, the nervous system, then you find movement, the sense of movement is easier. If you move in a way that leaves out the nature of the whole of the structure, often the experience is one of effort. And so effort doesn't relate directly to the amount of work being done. It has more to do with the coordination, the full coordination of the nervous system, the skeleton, the musculature. And when you do a movement in a well-coordinated fashion, it feels easy when you know what to do, know how to do. All right, take the arm overhead, the feet a little bit apart, and now try taking all three of the head, the shoulder, and the leg forward by doing something in the middle of yourself, taking the middle of yourself back into the floor to take the two ends forward such that you can lift the head, the shoulder, and the leg. You almost think long along the whole back as you shorten in the front to curve the spine to lift these three limbs. And how is it? Is it easier than just one? Is it easier than just the leg or the head to do all three? You can almost think you push the navel back into the floor to lift these three. And just try it several times, a little bit more, initiating in different ways that you take something back to take something forward. You get a sense of the coordination of that, the use of the powerful middle parts of yourself. Perhaps using an exhalation. Or if you like a little more complexity, you can, of course, also inhale as you lift. Maybe one's easier, maybe one's more difficult. And then when you're ready to rest, lower everything back toward the floor and take the arm alongside and rest. See what it's like to rest on the floor now. What your sense of the contact of the floor and the organization of the whole trunk, the pelvis, the head is like. All right, come again to stand. It may be helpful to orient toward a wall in the distance. You have a sense of the plane of the face and now, here in standing, take up a configuration similar to the one we were just using. So take the arm overhead, now in the direction of the ceiling, the right arm, and take the feet a little bit apart, a little wider than shoulder width or about shoulder width, and bend the knees lightly. Note what happens in the two hip joints. Now keep the face oriented toward the wall in front, and try this movement that we did in standing previously. We take the face toward the wall in front and the head a little comes toward the floor, and you take the, allow the back to go back to do that, the mid-back, so the back curves. So you bend the whole of the trunk so that the front shortens and the back lengthens, the mid and lower back go back as the arm and the face come forward. So see what that's like, that there's this sort of opposing movement in the low back, perhaps the lower part of the thoracic spine as well, the bottom of the low back, so the part of the back curves back as you, as the front of it, the top of it curves to take the head forward, and maybe the tailbone comes forward a little bit. All right, and then pause in standing. You can lower the arm. Now take the arm overhead again and see what happens if you don't involve the back and you just take the head and the arm forward. Is it even possible? Is there a little sense of strain? Do you lose your balance forward? Does the weight come into the balls of the feet? And then, once you've tried that a couple times, as you take the arm and the head forward, allow the back to go back, the pelvis to tip, so the back rounds a little as you take the arm forward and back. And to take the arm back and the head back, maybe you uncurve the spine. And then lower the arm and rest. Now, bend the two knees, make sure they're a little clearly bent, and take the hands to the low abdomen, kind of below the navel. And here, try this movement of taking the face toward the wall in front so that the head comes a little away from the ceiling. You shorten yourself by taking the back back. And note what happens in the low abdomen, the low part of the belly, as the pelvis tips, so that the tail comes between the legs, the head comes forward. See if it's possible to get a coordination. Maybe you even press lightly so that you get the sense that the low part of the belly goes back to take the head forward. Roll over the hip joints, the tailbone coming forward, the low belly falling back as the back goes back to bring the head forward. And then leave that to rest in standing for a moment. Put your feet wherever you like and just pause. So perhaps you note there it's possible to do all kinds of things, but to find a coordination of the whole of oneself in service of a simpler action with more ease, there are particular ways that that can be coordinated that's they're useful to discover. All right, now take the arm, the right arm overhead again, and this time, as you take the back, let the right knee come a little bit forward. The head comes forward, the arm comes forward, the back goes back, and the right knee comes forward. So you have to come a little onto your left leg. And then if you let the foot slide on the floor a little bit, the hand comes forward, the foot glides forward a little bit, and then take it back. And note what you do in the back to do that. Is it possible to think of the curving, the bending of the trunk, the whole of the spine, to take the leg forward a little with the arm and the head, and then back? So think of bending taking the middle of your front and the whole back, mid-back back, to take the arm and the leg forward. So the pelvis tips, the face comes forward, and then you unbend the back to take everything back. And take the arms alongside and pause for a moment. And take the arm overhead again and try out, take the back to lift, to slide the foot and the hand and the face forward, and then set that foot down, the right one, and bring your weight over it as you, in order to bring your weight over it, let the right hand come back overhead, and then take the back to take the left leg forward. So the hand and the face come forward, the left leg comes forward, and the mid-back goes back. And then set that one down. And then become upright again. The head goes toward the ceiling, the arm comes up, the back comes forward, and then bend the back to take the other leg forward with the arm and the face. And you see if you can slowly sort out this action. The arm stays more or less overhead as a kind of counterbalance. Try taking several steps this way. All right, then leave it. Come to rest on your back. Note your contact with the floor, any difference from right and left. Note how the whole of the trunk is organized so that it's reflected, such that it's the reflection of that you can find in part in your contact with the floor. Sense of where the hip joints are, where the base of the skull and the top of the spine are. And come once more to stand. Take the feet about shoulder width or slightly wider apart. And take the right arm overhead, and with the feet where they are, just once or twice, try this action of the taking the back to take the face and the arm forward. Feel the tip in the pelvis as the back rounds. feel the way that the face comes forward and the crown of the head, even slight, maybe only slightly, comes away from the ceiling as the back rounds. You become a little shorter, in other words, as the back rounds back. And take the arm alongside and this time take the back back and just lightly lift the right arm forward, come over the left foot and let the right knee drift forward a little bit and then bring it back. So you take the back, mid-back back, round the back to bring the right knee forward and the right hand. The face comes forward so that everything remains balanced. It's as if you're beginning a step, you actually bring the foot forward with the hand and the face as the back counterbalances by rounding, and then bring it back reversibly. And then next time the right foot is out there, set it down. The right hand's forward, the face is forward, and come up over the right foot and take the back back to lift, to slide the left knee and left hand and face forward. So the back, the action of the back counterbalances the movement of the limbs. So the left hand glides forward, the left foot, the left knee, and then bring your weight over that foot and let yourself come tall again in the middle and bring, then take the back back, the face forward, the right hand and foot forward. And note how there's an action in the back to counterbalance this. And then very slowly keep this up and come into walking so that you tip the pelvis to bring the foot forward. The face comes a little forward, the hand. You imagine walking like a hunter, like you want to walk very quietly. So you'd be able to, once you set that foot down, you could lift it and take it back very easily at any point. For example, if you stepped on something, a stick, you didn't want to break, you didn't want to make a sound, you could counterbalance through the whole of the spine using the head coming forward, the arm coming forward, the leg coming forward, and the back going back, rounding to counterbalance. So you can take a couple steps like this, take some steps backward using this, getting a little shorter as you move the leg and a little taller as you come up over it. Get a notion of what Feldenkrais calls reversibility. It's a quality of action such that you can change what you're doing and go back the way you came at any point. And if you leave the movement of the back and the pelvis and the head out, that's a little trickier here. You can try it, like keeping the whole of the pelvis, the neck, the shoulders, the head all stiff and try walking in this way. Or allow the head to come forward, the pelvis to tip so the back goes back as you step. All right, and then leave it and just take a little walk around without thinking too much about it. Feldenkrais suggests here, if you really want to get a sense of this action, try paying attention to these things going up a flight of stairs. How the head would come forward with the knee, how you get longer as you step onto that step and go up, how you round the back to lift the leg forward, etc. You can try that at some other point, since we don't have, well, we do have stairs. You could try that if you'd like. Otherwise, we will call it a lesson. We'll call it the movement of opposition. Thank you, everyone.